It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins join us from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law here on Let's Talk Legal. And good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
Hope everyone is well today.
Yeah, we are.
Surviving this season change that brings along the allergies and everything else.
Right.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
Last week, Ben, we spoke about protecting your assets, an area of the law known as elder law, protecting assets from a long-term care environment. As we know, nursing homes now are anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 a month, and nearly 50% of our population at some point is confronted or families are confronted with the issue of having a loved one that needs some sort of skilled care. And certainly there are things that we can do to kind of, as we say, get our ducks in a row. We don't want to be in a situation, if you will, Ben, where we've spent a lifetime of paying for our home place.
Yes.
Having it paid for, which is fairly typical of folks in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and some savings in the bank. And then, of course, you know, in the last year, 2 years of their life, they lose all of this net worth. This is very discouraging for the family. And let's add one more ingredient or one more factual scenario that Wes and I see quite often, which is it's bad enough when this happens to our widowed mother, okay? But imagine it happening to our parents, if you will, where one parent is the person needing the skilled care.
Right, right.
Having to spend down, having to lose a tremendous amount of their safety net, and yet there is in the community the wife still living, still doing pretty well, living in the home place. All the expenses are as they normally would be.
Right.
And so this scenario is particularly discouraging. Both scenarios are discouraging.
Right.
But when we are, when our community, doing well parent, if you will, or doing fairly well living in the home, is threatened, and her well-being is threatened because she's having to pay $5,000 or $6,000 a month to provide for her husband. This is a particularly frightening situation for a family.
Yeah, indeed. And leads to, again, you guys play firemen a lot in trying to put out the fires after the fact instead of the planning ahead, right?
That's right. And when we're talking about, you know, this Medicaid eligibility, you know, there's a whole subset of laws and rules and regulations regarding this under the long-term care, adult long-term care provisions of the Medicaid law. So they're much different than, you know, many of the other aspects of Medicaid. And, you know, as Cecil was saying, you know, we do see some potentially, I think discouraging is a good word. Sometimes they're tragic situations where, you know, potentially we have the husband or the wife. Usually it seems like it's the husband who has to go into the care facility, and then we lose his income. We can talk about those details in a minute.
Right.
And then, but within we have the community spouse who has years and years to live and is healthy, and we want to make sure that she's not left destitute.
So right, exactly.
Planning is so incredibly important because, you know, when we're talking about the Medicaid eligibility, we don't look at just the assets that are in the name of the applicant. The husband under the scenario I just laid out there is the assets of both husband and wife that are counted to make a determination as to whether the person would be eligible for Medicaid. So that's, you know, a sticky wicket. We can't transfer things into the wife's name if the husband is the one who's sick,
sure,
and vice versa.
Sure.
We have to, you know, count all of those assets and deal with them appropriately so we can preserve as much as possible. You know, another issue that we see in this scenario, Ben, where we have, let's say, the husband who's going into the care facility and is needing the long-term care, at $5,000 to $7,000 a month, is that, you know, we lose the income of the person who is receiving the Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the husband has the higher income. Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about income, I mean
sure.
Social Security, retirement,
pension,
or, you know, these type things. So, you know, it's pretty typical that we may see a situation where the husband's income is, you know, a couple thousand dollars a month, $1,500, $2,500, and the family really needs that money to make ends meet on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we lose that, but if we are in a situation where the husband is eligible for Medicaid and we've done the appropriate planning, then we can protect everything else. And that's just all the more reason
mm-hmm.
to protect the house and protect all of the savings, because during the period of time that the husband is receiving the Medicaid, we lose the income. And that's not, there's nothing we can do about that. There's nothing in the yeah. law we can do, but we can protect everything else. And that's just all the more reason to do that for the community spouse, the wife in that scenario.
Are required minimum distributions for an IRA, are they counted as income too?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But then we get into an issue about whether we're keeping the IRA or whether
mm-hmm.
we're needing to liquidate the IRA.
Right.
Depending on because the IRA itself is going to be a countable asset
mm-hmm.
for Medicaid eligibility purposes.
Mm.
However, we may be able to keep that under what's called the Community Spouse Resource Allowance, which
right.
allows the healthy spouse to keep one half of all countable assets up to a threshold of
mm-hmm.
about $120,000. So depending on the size of that, we may need to liquidate some and take a little bit of a tax hit,
mm-hmm.
or we may keep it. It just
mm-hmm.
depends. But then we get into the issue of distributions from that, and that would be seen as income we'd have to deal with.
Now we talk a lot about saving the or preserving the home place,
mm-hmm.
about protecting it, et cetera. Well, in this scenario, again, the husband is being cared for in a long-term care facility. Say it's some distance away.
Right.
Can the wife move? Can she
yeah.
move and still protect that asset or take yeah. it with her? Or?
Yes. So you're saying, what's your scenario
yeah, again?
You're saying
she's being cared for, you know, 150 miles away,
okay.
and she wants to be closer to him. So
okay.
she wants to sell her house and move to someplace closer. Is that portable?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we can do that. So any real property,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the home or whether it's an interest in some family property or whatever it might be, we can structure that property in a way using a two trust is the mechanism that
mm-hmm.
we use to do that, to make the property a non-countable asset so it's not used against the husband or wife for Medicaid eligibility purposes.
Right.
And we can do that without any look-back period.
Okay.
It can be an immediate type setup that we do. So let's say that we do have the spouse, the wife, living,
mm-hmm.
like you said, 150 miles away, but wants to move closer to wherever the husband
is being cared for. Yeah.
No problem.
Mm-hmm.
We would then sell the house. That might be the most difficult part, selling
mm-hmm.
the house
sure,
itself,
always.
You know, just because of the market. Sell the house, and then we would buy another piece of property, another house,
mm-hmm.
Close to wherever he may be, and structure that property in the trust in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a non-countable asset in
okay.
the same
just
way.
Just wondered how that could work, because I just can think of that scenario happening in our own family at one point in time.
So. Right. That's right.
All right. Again, if you have questions about your legal life, you can call in. We're talking about elder planning, but it could be any civil law question.
You can call me at 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. You can go online, too, at harvellandcollins.com and find out more information right there. But we'd love to have you join us and ask a question right after this break. Hey, welcome back. This is Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys of Law, every Tuesday morning to talk about Let's Talk Legal. And we're talking about elder planning there.
We are. Ben, there are a couple of tidbits, if you will, that kind of come to mind in this area that I want to make sure that I just throw out there. And if there are then questions, listeners are can feel free to call in now or call in next week or anytime, actually. We have to keep in mind, first of all, many times we get the comment from the wife, but that's my CD. That's my $100,000 that I inherited from my parents. I've had it at the bank for 20 years, Mr. Harvell. You know, that's my asset. Or that's my IRA titled in my name. For Medicaid purposes, we have to keep in mind that Medicaid looks at the joint assets of the husband and wife, no matter whose name they happen to be in. They are, I mean, all, so you cannot, even without outside of the five-year period, sometimes that gets mixed in there in the question that we get. Well, I, you know, 7 years ago transferred all of the liquidity, all the CDs over to my name when my husband got diagnosed with dementia or whatever. I put all the CDs over in my name. They've been there for 7 years now.
Okay,
doesn't matter.
Yeah,
Medicaid is going to look at all of the resources as between the husband and wife. Now, play that fact into a second marriage or third marriage, particularly, you know, and I, they're so wonderful to see. We see a lot of them now, Ben, you know, our geriatric lovebirds.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I mean, I just had a lady in my office the other day, 78 years old, looks just fabulous, such a fun lady, I could tell. She's going to get married. Okay. And these were her questions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what is, am, are my assets now going to be subject to my husband's, to my husband-to-be? Are my assets going to be subject to his long-term care? And the answer is absolutely yes. And furthermore, the other not good news that I have to unfortunately tell a client like that is that I cannot fix that through a prenuptial agreement. I cannot draft a prenuptial agreement between the two of you that will effectively keep your assets separate and distinct for purposes of Medicaid. For all other purposes, divorce, inheritance, years support, you know, those kinds of things, elective share, I can do it. But for Medicaid purposes, Medicaid will not honor the prenuptial agreement. So Medicaid, I've got to lay it out on the table. Medicaid is not a friend of our geriatric lovebirds.
Well, it's one of the reasons why there's a growing number of over 65 new relationships that just that don't get married.
Correct.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Which is,
you know, Cecil, another question I get oftentimes is, you know, what about this account that I put my child's name on years ago?
Correct.
It's a joint account. I put my child's name on it. That's not countable, is it? And the answer to that one is not good news either. It's completely countable because it would be completely accessible.
Yeah.
Even though it's joint with the child, you can still go close the account out at any point in time. So you get that question fairly often as well.
And that's, again, one of the reasons why it leads people to title property or to put things in kids' names, you know, without that consult.
Yeah, that's right. We get the question a lot. Sometimes after it's already been done, the property was transferred over into the kids' names. There's, you know, really, you have to be really careful in doing that. It used to be a bigger issue when North Carolina assessed a gift tax for that type thing. We don't have that problem anymore, but we do have a problem with losing the step up in tax basis if it's not done right, and we do have the problem with the five-year look-back period. Which and we have the problem with the twists and turns of the child's life.
Exactly.
Put your house or whatever property in your child's name, and they're in a divorce.
There's a divorce.
There's
there
your
you
property. Okay. Yep. If they're in a car accident that they cause and they get sued over a result of that, as a result of that, then your property is entangled in all that. If they're in a lawsuit because they didn't pay their debts or whatever, then your property is entangled in that.
Well, the famous football coach said, a pass downfield has three possibilities and only one of them's good.
That's right. I remember that.
So, that happens in the law. Now, you bring up a scenario that I have unfortunately seen happen as well, too. Someone is in long-term care, back to our kind of distant scenario, whatever, long-term care, and the surviving or the spouse at home decides to get a divorce.
Right.
Does that throw all the property up for grabs again?
Yes. Mm. Yes. So, yeah, we have to go through that procedure to determine what how the property ends up.
Right.
We have to keep in mind that in North Carolina, however, we have a 1 year, a 1 year separation period.
Right. Yeah. Before divorce.
So we've had files come in where they are second marriages. The older folks who have decided to get married, and then suddenly they've only been married say 3 years, and then of course their spouse goes into a nursing home, and then of course the explosion occurs, the bad news occurs that, by the way, ma'am, your assets are subject to his long term care.
Mm-hmm.
She now comes in and says, well, I understand that I never knew that before. Now my account is going to be depleted, $7,000 a month. Okay. He doesn't have the assets. I love him, but he didn't have the resources, but I do.
Right.
I think I'm going to get a divorce. Well, it takes a year in the state of North Carolina to get a divorce.
Right.
So, I don't mean to be this morning on this issue of older folks getting married the bearer of bad tidings, because just like I said, the lady that was just in the office, she's coming back. We're going to plan around it. We're going to look at all of the scenarios that could occur, and we're going to come up with some very good options for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she is being proactive.
Again, that's
and
the
that's
key.
What the key is for she's taking a very proactive approach, and therefore she's going to have a good result.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Wes and I would like to encourage. You cannot just go get married at these older ages without considering these consequences.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, and time for you to get in a call if you'd like at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Hey, welcome back to the program. Good to have you along with us here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, 5 minutes before the hour. And again, talking about elder law, and Cecil, you brought up the excellent point about being proactive.
Absolutely. I mean, whether or not we are just a single older person, or whether or not we are, our husband and our wife are still living but are getting a little bit older, and the children are the middle-aged children, the sandwich generation, if you will, are concerned about their older parents, and they're planning to make sure that their affairs are in order. Or lastly, whether or not we are an elder person who is about to remarry someone that we are marrying in the later years of our life. These are all issues that need to be dissected. The facts need to be laid on the table. And then Wes and I need to put together the appropriate documents that will begin to address the various scenarios that could occur in an elder law context.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tremendous amount of a positive result that we're able to obtain in these files, given the opportunity to work with the client.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, we are able to achieve a very positive result for these types of clients.
Yeah, but all of these things, these actions always have consequences, and it's important to know what those possibilities are.
It is. But, earlier on and last week, absolutely, you start with the protecting of any real property that the two persons may own. And then after that, you then begin to talk about ways to protect the liquidity that mm-hmm. exists in the estate, mm-hmm. keeping in mind that the liquidity is going to be looked at no matter whose name it happens to be in, no matter how many children you happen to add to the account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
No matter how long you've owned that, just mm-hmm. in your individual name. If you're married in the state of North Carolina, then, of course, the Medicaid officers are going to look at the joint assets of the husband and the wife.
Mm-hmm. And again, there can be efforts to claw back assets, right, if you haven't disposed of them properly.
Clawback is a good word. Also, just simply they are sanctioned or mm-hmm. penalized for X number of months
right.
that are attributable to those monies.
Mm-hmm.
So if for some reason, let's say nursing home is $7,000 a month and we gave away $21,000, then that's 3 months of ineligibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that's how that works.
I know we just have maybe a minute left. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the big issues that I see here as well is, you know, you can make your home place a non-countable asset. I mean, you could walk right over to the Department of Social Services mm-hmm. in the event there's a need for long-term care and sign a document called an intent to return home.
Right.
That just magically, under the law, mm-hmm. makes the home place a non-countable asset where it's not on the radar screen to determine if we're eligible.
Yeah, for now.
That is such a catch-22
right.
because that is wonderful. It makes the property not countable. However, in the event that the planning stops there, we don't do anything else, then upon the death of the Medicaid recipient, then Medicaid comes back, exercises its lien rights,
mm-hmm.
And would force the sale of that property
mm-hmm.
in order to recover what it paid in, for long-term care.
Okay.
Now, that can be very easily avoided with some planning. Planning to place the title in a non-probate posture so it would not be subject to that recovery.
And find out more by calling 252-726-9050 for HarvellandCollins.com.